The Guardian. Football Weekly.
Football Weekly Extra. Hard-hitting, but at the same time, not that kind of podcast. Today, Rooney and Sir Alex. I say tomato, you say bewildering betrayal of a club that's given you so much, you ungrateful chav. Let's call the whole thing off. We've the latest on the Wayne Storm, plus actual football, you know, on pitches. Champions League. Gareth Bale from San Siro to hero in crazy Inter-Spurs clash. Moose Madrid, Muller Milan, and Rangers still unbeaten in Europe after a brave draw with Valencia. Sid joins us for a thorough continental going over, and we look forward to the weekend. There's the big game at Eastlands, Man City Arsenal. There's what's left of Man United at Stoke. There's Roy's Liverpool in a relegation dogfight with Rovers. And there's the Old Firm derby. All of that plus your posts in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hello, planet. On board today, we have Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. Rob Spy.
Hello, James.
Hi, Rob. With plenty to say, I'm thinking. Right now, because you just put a mint in your mouth. I am sorry about that. And fresh off the plane from Milano, Kevin McCarra.
I'm not sure fresh is quite the word, but thank you.
All right. Off the plane from Milano, Kevin McCarra. Now, plenty to talk about, so let's keep it tight, team. We're beginning with Wayne Rooney. Sean, you insisted that we leave with Wayne Rooney because they were going to have a big announcement this morning. What was decided?
Well, the announcement, as of going to press, hasn't come through yet.
No!
David Gill and Sir Alex Ferguson are meeting at the moment where they're going to sort of reveal whether Rooney's played his last game, whether they're going to let him go in the January transfer window. But, you know, listeners will know before we do.
All right, a couple of points. And now that he actually is ankle injured, doesn't that mean the whole argument's over? And is it any coincidence that it was Paul Scholes who went in and did him, Fergie's most loyal lieutenant, Rob?
No, it was always going to be Scholes or Wes Brown. There's also a good picture of Wes Brown. Looks like he's laughing his head off as Rooney writhes in agony.
Is it a dressing room? Is it? Seriously, do you think it's a split dressing room now at Old Trafford?
I doubt it. I think Scholes could easily do that to anyone on a given day.
But I mean, in general.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I'd imagine a lot of people have sympathy with Rooney's views, but just dare say it.
Right. Do you have sympathy with Rooney's views?
Yeah, massively. I think if that's his sole reason for leaving, and I doubt it is, I suspect it's that, and obviously...
He wants to rub his forefinger and thumb together.
I think United are quite clearly in decline, significant decline, because of the Glazers. Why should he do what Brian Robson did and spend 10 years winning nothing, surrounded by mediocrity? I think it's perfectly reasonable.
Now, that would be perfectly reasonable if he'd been saying this before now. I mean, I think Rob's right. You know, United are declining, but
he did ask in the summer at the end of last season. He said he came out just before the last game and said, if we sign two world class players, we can challenge for the league. They signed Smalling, Bebe, and Hernandez.
Can I just play devil's advocate? I mean, I agree actually that Man U are downsizing, but nonetheless, they won three titles in a row before last season.
They finished 1 point off the top last season.
Let me finish. He won the Champions League in 2008. Now, I agree that I think the Glazers are bad for Manchester United, but choreography has been hopeless. Why have an agent who decides on day four of the saga or whenever it is that the real problem is Manchester United aren't good enough? Not a word about it until suddenly the penny drops. Ah, maybe I can get the red and gold boys on my side.
Two quick points.
Green and gold, sorry.
Two quick points. First of all, that team that won the Champions League in 2008, its strike force was Ronaldo, Tevez, Rooney. All three could well be gone by January. The second point is, we talk about Paul Stretford. I think it's when United fans forget this is a guy that, you know,
Rooney's agent.
Right, yeah, Rooney's agent. He left Everton, you know.
Does that mean that Rooney's heading for a Stretford end, ironically enough?
But by the way, are you implying that Berbatov doesn't count then? Because he didn't play in 2008, he's rubbish? Or, I mean,
well, no,
they have to get good players.
But I'm backing up Rob's point, really, that, you know, they're not as strong as they were. But when Rooney left for Manchester United, Paul Stretford, then agency proactive, picked up £500,000 up front, £500,000 shortly afterwards, and then were given another £500,000 after Rooney had stayed for a certain amount of time. You know, it's obvious what Stretford wants.
I think United fans, nobody's covered themselves in glory here. Not Rooney, certainly not Ferguson, and certainly not United fans. I mean, Rooney's doing to United exactly what he did to Everton.
What's Ferguson done wrong then?
Well, he's completely completely disingenuous. I mean, I found a celebration of his performance quite disgusting, actually, because it was great politically, but basically this man knows full well, I'm sure he does, that he says he's got money to spend, there's no value out there, blah blah blah. Do we really think Ferguson is going to sit on 200 million while his legacy is going down the pan? Of course not. He says he doesn't know why Rooney wants to leave. Oh, I'm really shocked. Rooney says he told him in August that it was because of lack of ambition. So one of them is completely lying. Now, people have their own opinions. Most people seem to think Rooney is lying. I think I know who's lying.
One more thing puzzles me about Wayne Rooney. I mean, there's this kind of patronising thing that he ought to spend his whole life at Manchester United.
Yeah.
I mean, let's say, for example, a player who's approaching 25 does want to go and play somewhere else. It could just be money, but it's not such a strange thing to leave in your mid-20s and look for something else.
That's so very true. A couple of things. An excellent blog on this on Dave's Football blog, who points out, first of all, that Everton have a 25% sell-on clause in their contract. Rob, you're wincing at that mention.
No, I don't know if it's certain, but I heard something about it was only in the first 5 years. Okay. I don't know if that's true or not.
All right. Well, equally, the whole business of the Webster ruling, FIFA's ruling from 2 years ago, Andy Webster, in the case of Andy Webster, any player can buy out the remaining of their contract for the remaining value of that contract once they've been, for someone of Wayne's age, at a club for 3 years. Is this going to be relevant in this case?
I don't think so. I mean,
it would mean Wayne could leave for $5 million.
Yeah, the Independent went big on this on Tuesday, but I think all the clubs and the players tend to agree that it's not worth enforcing this because of the problems it will lead down the line.
So the clubs have almost got an informal agreement not to use the Webster ruling because it's just going to cause chaos. Interesting. A lot of the Spanish press, and I think one or two German journalists of our acquaintance, believe that a deal is already done, that a deal is already in place, and that's why Rooney has now come out with all of this. The deal involves Manchester City. Do we know anything about that?
Well, City stonewalled it yesterday, as you'd expect. Martin Samuel, I thought, made a very good point in yesterday's Daily Mail. Manchester's such a small place that if Rooney does swap from red to blue, his life will be a misery. And Martin Samuel thinks it? That, yeah, because he can't.
Well, how much does he go out and hang out with fans anyway?
Well, you see him, he goes out to buy £200 worth of cigarettes. And
that's the thing. I do dispute the notion that you used to hang out with United fans, but now they're going to be really upset with you, so you can't go and hang out with them in the pub anymore. He just simply doesn't live in those kind of circles.
Precisely. If anyone wants to chin him, they're going to have to get past the VIP gates. It's not going to happen. I know Rooney is a scale up from Tevez. I don't think it'd be a huge problem, and if it was, I don't think it would register for him.
But my point rather was that Martin Samuel's point he made was that if you go to London, Cesc Fabregas, when he first was in the Arsenal team, would travel by the tube to go to London games. Frank Lampard goes for a drink in his local. I don't think Rooney can do that in Manchester. So,
anyway, Sean, that's nothing compared to Maurice Johnson agreeing to go to Celtic and going to Rangers. As far as I know, he's still alive. Yeah. So, if he can do that, then Wayne Rooney can stay in Manchester.
Rob, is Wayne doing this because he knows that he might need an ankle operation and that he's never going to be the same player again? So he either gets a fat payout now, especially with those new UEFA regulations coming in, or...
I doubt it. I think,
Do you think we'll ever be that again?
We don't know because so many people are lying. We just don't know. But I suspect that his prime motivation is ambition. I mean, don't forget he left the club he loves at 18 because he wanted to win trophies. He may need an ankle operation. I mean, there was one quote saying Ferguson knows Rooney will be finished in 2 years' time and therefore he's not going to bother. We hear all this. I don't know. I doubt it.
That's a very good point to make. Man United getting upset because he wants to leave to look for more trophies. A bit rich since that's exactly how they got him from Everton.
And don't forget, people are saying Rooney might be finished. This time last season, he was giving superhuman performances. The only reason United got so close to four titles in a row was him, basically. Mm. When the Glazer thing really kicked in, and I think those who were opposed to them thought, well, Ronaldo, they'll accept going because he wanted to go to Madrid. Tevez, they can write him off as a swine. Everyone said the day Rooney goes will be the day people realise the Glazers have to go and it will really kind of kick on. And it just hasn't. People are so stupid that they're now primarily siding with Ferguson and the Glazers, which I find extraordinary.
Do you hear that, people? You're stupid.
I mean, the other thing, I think, finally, is this the end of the patriarchal manager? Sir Alex Ferguson has always had, he's always been this fiery, fearsome guy, but he's also had empathy with that, and he's also always been able to bring players along, guide them, into his way. And I think maybe now he's got no control.
Might be the
situation.
End of that patriarchal manager, but I don't think that the figure is going to disappear with him.
I think I swore never to say that Alex Ferguson has come to the end of his era. I remember several years ago people thinking he always kind of winding down. It's all Chelsea now. Remember that in the first flush of Abramovich.
I made an almighty mistake in 2006.
We've all done it.
But I'd be astonished if he ever wins a league or European Cup again. I'd be really astonished. He may win a League Cup. I mean, what's he going to win?
I remember Kevin's first column for The Guardian in 2002 writing Ferguson off.
What's he going to win it
before that as well, I imagine, from my previous paper.
And just Rob, one last thing. More rope.
The one people who've come out this year week really well are the Glazers. They get another interest payment, and they've somehow, without doing anything, they can write it off as really big a bad egg.
All right. In the meantime, some other Man United players have been on pitches, kicking footballs around with some quite interesting consequences. A 1-0 win Wednesday night, against Bursaspor, Turkish champions, of course, which keeps United top of the group, 2 points clear of the amazing Rangers. More on Rangers later. Nice post from Eastern 14. It says, Man United fans better hope Nani doesn't score too many goals like the one against Bursaspor, or he might start attracting the attention of bigger clubs.
He's next year's interest.
Okay. And what does this all mean? Without Rooney, who, whatever anybody wanted, can't play now because he really does have an ankle injury, United go to the Britannia Stadium this weekend. United have one win in five. How big a potential banana skin is this one?
Yeah, possibly. The one thing United have done well at Stoke...
For Stoke, I mean.
Very good. The one thing United have done well at Stoke is kind of stand up to them physically. They have Vinic and Ferdinand who are experienced. But with United, anything's possible. Though. They're a fairly average side, dependent on Nani.
One win in five.
And Berbatov for creativity, which is extraordinary given that a year ago those two were kind of pariahs almost. But every away game is difficult now. We've seen that with United this season. They haven't won one yet. And it'll be really interesting. Last year, they had the best away record in the Premier League, which seems extraordinary now because they'll do well to win 10 away games this year now.
Rob, having written off Ferguson in the past, moving on to players, do you reckon that you can now sense, obviously Gary Neville's kind of gone, do you sense Scholes and Giggs? I know he's injured, going down quite steeply at the moment.
I think, well, Scholes has been playing pretty well, and it's interesting.
He can play so deep, doesn't he, nowadays?
Yeah, he does. 2 years ago, Scholes was on the periphery. Now he's being rested for the game, for the nothing games like Bursaspor, because he's so important. I don't know, I think he's probably his last season, but he's become as important as he was pretty much in his prime now, which, again, shows how United have declined, because while he has played very well this season, when he's been given time, he's still nowhere near the player he was.
Yeah. Sean Ingram.
One quick point about Stoke. Stoke are very much Jekyll and Hyde. They have a fantastic record against the bottom half of the table. I mean, last season they won six and drew two out of nine, but they only won one at home against the top ten last season. So generally, good teams tend to find them out.
Mainly because they stand up to them physically. I think they know what they're doing in defence.
Right. That's it for part one. Plenty more to discuss in part two as we move on to some more of the Champions League midweek action.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Well, first off, cracking result for Chelsea at the Luzhniki Stadium. Many people were wondering what the ghosts of 2008 might mean for various members of the Chelsea party, but a 2-0 win, and what a goal by Zhirkov.
That had me drooling. That was a fantastic goal.
Yeah.
There's that lovely moment when the ball drops and a player's running onto it. You have kind of a 2 second window where you think this is either going top corner or out of the ground. And it's quite exciting. And then obviously it went in the top corner.
Some cracking goals. Sorry.
I was going to say, is it worth just saying? We give John Terry a lot of stick, often with good reason. But I think he's playing exceptionally well at the moment. He was really good again, which, you know, it's not an easy thing personally to go back to the scene of his biggest humiliation.
I turn up here every week, don't I?
But strange, by the way, he's remembered that Anelka isn't the guy who actually
caught
somebody.
It's
weird.
Well, he kind of played his part.
But the man who actually made sure that Man U won it was Anelka. I mean, John Terry didn't lose the cup by missing that penalty.
Also, in Wednesday's action, a fantastic match at the San Siro, Inter against Spurs. Kevin McCarrie, you were there. Italian team takes Premier League side apart in first half of game, concedes three in second. How come it's always Rafa Benitez involved in these?
He's a drama queen, he can't help it. But it was quite extraordinary in the sense that, Gareth Bale single-handedly turned things around in the second half. But Inter, they're just going through Spurs at will in the first half. It's okay saying, you know, that Woodgate's out and Dawson's out, and, you know,
they were down 10 men as well.
Oh yes, indeed. But let's remember that Inter scored before they went down to 10 men in the second minute. I mean, and it was like that from kickoff. You could go through them at will. And I think Spurs are an entertaining team to watch, but the fragility is amazing. There's not that many clean sheets in the record, and there won't be.
One thing I was curious about, because you often talk about the ageing nature of teams like Milan.
and Inter. And Biabiani and Coutinho were, I wouldn't say they were incredible, but they both played well at that level.
It's interesting to see an Italian side starting with a couple of teenagers.
And also, I don't remember Eto'o being in quite as hot a streak as this. Mm. I mean, he scored loads this season already, scoring in every game. He's obviously enjoying the fact that the injury has given him a chance to start at centre forward rather than playing behind the Milito.
How seriously do you take Spurs' three goals in the second half?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, I feel I underrated Gareth Bale a lot in the past. I didn't go to all that many Spurs games. I thought he was tidy and, you know, quite good, but not this dynamic figure. I spoke to people who watch Spurs regularly, and they say really it happened in the second half of last season. Mm. I don't know whether he is more powerful or just more confident, but the way he went at guys like Zanetti, who's 37 years, were exposed in that closing stage, was remarkable.
Well, if you think it's only a year ago that he was primarily a League Cup player that was a left back that was, you know, people thought he couldn't defend. Whenever he played for Spurs, they couldn't win a game.
Exactly.
It's a remarkable turnaround, and he's a lovely lad. So, you know,
mentioning Maicon's comments after the match.
Yeah, no, in the mix zone afterwards, which you'll read about in tomorrow's papers, Maicon was saying this guy's, you know, could play for Brazil. He's that good.
So. Yeah. He certainly looked extraordinary. Although all that did happen after Inter were 4-0 up and wondering whether they could get double figures, and it was kind of symptomatic the way that Maicon, for example, waved him through for the second goal. He tried a kind of disinterested chip at the ball, and when he didn't get it, he just stood there and watched Bale go by, because in his head it was out of, you know, I don't want to say in any way denigrate his performance, which I thought was extraordinary, and the Italian press had gone wild about it, you know, Gareth Bale this and Inter must buy this player that.
I think Inter were unprofessional. They did switch off completely. I mean
Spurs took full advantage, but no doubt one of the main causes was the lax tackling in the Inter team.
What do the three goals mean for the next time they meet at White Hart Lane? Do they give Spurs added impetus because they realise we can hit this team, we don't need to be afraid of them in the way that perhaps they were at the start, or were they a salutary lesson for Inter ahead of that match?
I tend to think that Inter will want to impose themselves again at White Hart Lane. And if Spurs' defence doesn't somehow cohere between now and then, I don't know how they're going to stop Eto'o from scoring again.
Mm. What's interesting is that Redknapp was clearly conscious of this. He played Modric in the hole rather than central midfield. In many ways, I think they were caught between two stools. They stood off, they were too respectful. I think Spurs' best chance might be just to go for it, play the usual 4-4-2. Modric in centre mid, Van der Vaart behind Crouch. Just whoever scores the most wins.
Mm. And poor old Modric didn't last any time at all, did he?
No.
With Kudicini coming on.
All right, well, moving on. Bad news from Italy, the trouble down in Naples ahead of the clash with Liverpool Thursday night in the Europa League. There was vandalism at the stadium, which I think can be read as probably an attempt by certain areas of the supporters to wring concessions from the club management. But also some stabbings, some incidents of stabbings and trouble between locals and English tourists in some cases, and possibly Liverpool fans. You'll no doubt read about that as well, but very unfortunate, and equally unfortunate is the fact that this does seem to happen with depressing frequency in certain Italian
towns. Is anything being done about it? I know I've watched a lot of Italian football over the last decade in Italy, and I've enjoyed it immensely. I know we sometimes have a little sparring sessions, but there is that frisson of danger, which is nice. Can be exciting as well. But, you know, I've been at the, you know, Juventus Inter, I've been at, you know, big Lazio games, big Roma games, and there is that element there, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a tape taken off me outside the Stadio Olimpico at knife point, so it is a real issue, and the Stadio Olimpico is one of the worst places. The Italians do take it seriously. Whether they have been as effective as say, the English were, obviously not at this point, but one of the reasons that attendances are down and there's a big split between the kind of whole ultra community and the people who run football is over the fact that they have been introducing increasingly stringent policies on how you get into stadiums, what kind of thing you can do in stadiums, that kind of thing. It doesn't really affect what happens outside stadiums, of course, and ultimately I think that they will never really sort the stadiums out until they actually build new ones which have a different design that won't just congregate large masses of people with very few access points and no identifiable seating or anything like that. That is, though, another story. In other midweek news from the Italian point of view, Roma beaten 3-1 at home by Basel. Ranieri kind of tacitly admitting that he thinks he may have lost the dressing room, that he even asked the players, have I lost the dressing room? and the word is there that were it not for the fact that the club is effectively in limbo, that Leonardo would be sitting on the Roma bench. The other Italian team in the Champions League was, of course, Milan at the Bernabeu on Tuesday night against Real Madrid. A 2-0 win for Mourinho's men. Sid Lowe joins us now to discuss that.
Hello.
Hello, wankers.
I think it only works if it's later wankers, doesn't it?
Oh.
I heard that we had a parental advisory sticker on our pod last time.
Yeah. We did. We also had one on Sunday. I don't know why. Was there some salty talk on?
I can't remember hearing any of
that. I don't think so. I think maybe it was just if Barry's in, they stick one in anyway. Spanish reaction, first of all, Sid, to Real Madrid's 2-0 win against Milan.
Very, very pleased, and not just pleased because of the 2-0 against Milan and the result, but the fact that Madrid looks so comfortable, and also the fact that it kind of confirms the trend in the last couple of weeks. Madrid slaughtered Deportivo 6-1, they beat Malaga 4-1, they now 2-0 against Milan. It was all built up to this game because everybody was saying, well, they've not had a real test yet, and this was going to be a real test. Now, for what it's worth, Milan maybe, I'm not sure if they were a real test or not, but certainly things look very good for Madrid. Mourinho is now the first coach to win his first 10 games as a Real Madrid manager. And also, this is the first time in 22 years that Madrid have won their first three Champions League game without even conceding a goal.
Wow. That said, and I saw the headline saying in both Italy and Spain that it was a real lesson for Milan. That said, the 70 seconds with the two goals in them aside, the other 89 minutes, Milan had their chances and, you know, held it fairly tight.
Yeah, but I think what Madrid's argument would be, and I think with some justification as well, is that they never looked in trouble. They were very comfortable. Mourinho was insisting after the game on the fact that they've been very intelligent with the way that they closed the game out, the way they made it difficult for Milan. I personally would argue, although unfortunately, and this is kind of ruins the argument in a way, when you're writing a match report, sometimes you miss things because, of course, you're looking at your screen. But I would argue that until Rubinho came on, Milan actually created very little. It was only really in the last 5 or 6 minutes that they made very much happen.
And when Seedorf was all alone in front of Casillas and blasted it over, that was a huge chance. And the Pirlo free kick that was sailing into the top corner as well.
Yeah, my argument would be that having a free kick that hits the bar is not quite the same as creating chances. Madrid, to me at least, felt very comfortable. They felt like they could up it and score as well. I mean, there was a bad miss from Higuain, for example. Yeah. There was a couple of other very good chances. But I think Madrid afterwards were very, very pleased with the way it went. Mourinho was trying to point out as well. He said, look, if it looked easy, that's not because of AC Milan. That's because of us. We played very well and we made it look easy because we performed really impressively. So the overall reaction is one of being really very impressed indeed with Real Madrid from the Spanish media.
Barcelona beat Copenhagen. Not a very impressive performance, but two cracking goals from Leo Messi. Well, the first one was good anyway.
Yeah, not a particularly impressive performance at all. More worries again over David Villa, who I must admit, I mean, you know, obviously I would say this because I'm a defender of Villa normally anyway, but he's struggling for goals. He's missing a lot of chances, and people are on his back and saying it's not quite right for him, which it isn't. That's certainly true. But he has now hit the post of the bar, I think, 5 times, and he did again last night. But he doesn't look quite right. Barcelona weren't particularly good. I think without Xavi Hernandez, I don't think they're quite the same side, although Javier Mascherano did play pretty well last night. The other thing is, it sometimes feels with Barcelona that you get a team like Copenhagen come to the Camp Nou or Mallorca in the league, and maybe Barcelona can get caught out because it almost seems a bit too easy for them. Because when they've been asked to perform in big games this year, they've generally done it. They beat Atletico, they've beaten Athletic Bilbao, they've beaten Valencia, and they've beaten Sevilla. But yeah, last night wasn't great. Messi scored 2 goals, and I think that's pretty much the end of the story.
A couple of transfer things I just wanted a quick reaction on. Erin Murphy posting saying, can you ask Sid about the Florenti transfer rumours? It's been linked with Barcelona.
And Real Madrid. I actually think Real Madrid's the more likely of the two options.
All right, then. And also, I saw that the front page of one of the Spanish papers during the week had the headline that Rooney already has a City deal in place. Do they have any particular reason for saying that, Sid?
Well, I mean, bear in mind that whenever something like this Wayne Rooney situation emerges, there's always three parties, two clubs, or maybe even more than two clubs, and the player, and different pieces of information come out from different areas. The feeling that is emanating, not entirely clearly, but emanating to some extent from Real Madrid, is that they feel that the chances are Rooney has already got a deal elsewhere. I think there's a certain degree of guesswork in terms of saying that they think there's a deal already in place with Manchester City. One of the things that I think is interesting in all of this is that Real Madrid are kind of, if you like, quietly pointing out that Wayne Rooney is fairly conflicted, that there's been problems with the tabloids, and that he's very, very expensive. Now, to be honest with you, I read that as excuses. I read that as Real Madrid getting their excuses in early if he doesn't go, because I think ultimately this is a decision that's in Wayne Rooney's hands. I think if he was to say to Real Madrid, yes, I want to go to you, I don't think Madrid would have any problem with the tabloid revelations. I don't think they'd have any problems with his financial demands. It sounds to me like Real Madrid are looking at a situation in which they think he's probably not coming. And I would say, this perhaps is a bit over cynical, but I would say that what they're doing is getting their excuses in early so that if and when he doesn't join Real Madrid, they can say, well, it was because we didn't want him.
Right, excellent stuff. All right then, Sid, on to the big one then. Valencia, Spanish side struggling once again in Scotland, getting a point, but little else from the clash with the excellent Rangers.
Two headlines today in two different newspapers, the exact same headline, Valencia survive in Scotland. And there is a very clear sense that they were a little fortunate to get the 1-1, or maybe not just a little fortunate. Emery, the Valencia coach, was saying that he thought a draw was a fair result. I'm not sure that anyone in Scotland felt the same way. One little kind of proviso to all this, which is that one of the Spanish papers did accuse Rangers of being, I think the phrase was, aggressive, rough, and ultra defensive. And they said Valencia had all of the ball, but Rangers had all chances. So there is an admission of the fact that Valencia probably should have been defeated. But at least part of the Spanish press is a little bit, what should we say, a little bit puritanical, shall we say, about the way that the game was played, and that they don't particularly like Rangers' approach. But yeah, absolutely, there's a recognition of the fact that Valencia were fortunate to get away with it. The good news from a Spanish point of view is that Valencia still have qualification in their own hands, and they have two of their next three games at Mestalla. Of course, they go away to Manchester United, but the other two games are in Spain. So they think it's not that bad. But yeah, they've been surprised by Rangers. And again, the context of that Spain game against Scotland, 10 days ago now? Certainly really, really impressive with the atmosphere in Scottish stadiums and Scottish fans.
Sid, thank you so much for that. And we'll catch up with you next week.
Fantastic.
Nice one. Thanks, Sid.
Cheers.
Sid Lowe in Spain. COS88, Kevin, also suggesting that that Rangers will qualify for the last 16, or at the very least go far in the Europa League. And of course they have, which is, they are unbeaten in Europe, aren't they? They have the old firm game.
Yes, I mean, Celtic are kind of a batch of new players. They sold Aidan McGady to Russia, to Moscow, and virtually built a whole team with that money. It's Neil Lennon's, that he's now been permanently appointed as manager. It's his first managerial job. But I think as a player, he was that kind of pragmatic type. He's not liable to be seduced by dreams of beautiful football. Celtic are playing good attacking football under Lennon, but I think he has probably good potential as a manager.
Well, they meet Rangers this weekend. Is it at Ibrox? Is it
Celtic Park?
Is it Celtic Park? And both teams have won all their games so far in the league.
Yes, I mean, Celtic squeaked through last weekend. But yeah, it's actually quite a dismal scene in Scotland. There was a time, as people remember, long ago, when Dundee United and Aberdeen supplanted Celtic and Rangers. But now you don't even feel that they're even liable to beat them in a one-off game. And in the long term, it's not good for Celtic and Rangers, and it's certainly not good for Scottish football.
It's like La Liga. Scottish Premier League's the new Spanish league.
Mm. One or two more of your posts. Harry Kidnap saying, if Rooney leaves, I think Vidic is going to see it as an opportunity to go to Giggs and Scholes. Probably won't be playing next season. Would be awesome to see Liverpool, Man United and Leeds fighting for the title again, even if it is for the Championship. Fair point. Toby Oluwakayodi, or Toby 316, as he tweets, says, why are the media trying to sell Gareth Bale? Why, Sean?
We're not. We're doing the same. What a great performance.
No, that's not true. The Guardian certainly today was Harry needs to hang a big not for sale sign. Everyone has assumed that his performance means that he may well be leaving Spurs. Why is that the case? Can they hang on to him?
Well, is anything, you know, if Inter or whoever were to offer 25 million for him, I'm sure,
it's the nature of modern football. We have a sense of who the big clubs are. Spurs aren't quite one of them. It's interesting just to look very quickly. England's Italian 90 squad, and they came from all over the Division 1. Derby, Forest, Tottenham, who weren't a big club then. Now, of course, you can pretty much most of them are at five or six clubs. I know Bailey's in English, but the point stands.
I see Bale's just started a new contract, hasn't he? I don't know if that means he simply can demand more money for him, or whether that means he might honour it for a year or two.
Exactly. Right. It's always weird when people celebrate signing a new contract. If a player wants to go, he'll go.
Yeah, but they tend not to go within minutes, do they? not normally.
Jim Dixon, Big J Diddy, as he catchily entitles himself, says, if Fergie has the cows and Rafa the milk, can the podcast provide the cheese? It's a good question, that one, isn't it? Should I mention IFAB? Goal Line Technology.
Yes.
They've said that companies must present to the International FA Board, the IFAB, next month their proposals. I think 13 different companies have proposals for Goal Line Technology. If they agree, then they're going to have a testing period to follow as IFAB reevaluates technology. The technology would apply solely to the goal line and whether a goal has been scored or not. The system must be accurate. That's a nice thought. The indication of whether a goal has been scored must be immediate and automatically confirmed within 1 second.
That's ridiculous.
It's not. I look at ice hockey.
I know, but I think if it was 4 seconds or 5 seconds, the world wouldn't end.
If it works, it's going to work immediately. It's not a machine that's going to go, I must think about that. That's my computer voice.
You're auditioning for the next Tron, or...
Hey.
Can you imagine?
Don't tease.
Short circuit.
You in Tron.
Me in Tron.
So what's the timescale? Will we have it for Euro 2024, do you think?
Yeah. Euro 2024. Yeah.
Will you be doing the UEFA presenting?
I doubt it. That's it for part two. You can get more European views and indeed news in my paper review, which will be up from Friday morning at the Guardian website, guardian.co.uk/football/video as well. That's another way of getting to it. How nice. In part three, very, very shortly, we'll be looking forward to the weekend in the Premier League. Kevin McCarron, just back from the San Siro. Next stop, Eastlands for the Man City-Arsenal game. Cracking clash.
This really is big time. Never been San Siro.
Very, very big game. Arsenal, another big win for them in Europe midweek, of course.
Yeah, but it's also another test for them. They're playing a team who, as far as I can see, have kind of modelled themselves on Chelsea. You know, tough, good players, but hard to play against. I'm a bit surprised in a way. Maybe I'm just facile, but I kind of thought Sheikh Mansour, for all that money, would be wanting extravagance and excitement and everyone saying how lovely Man City are. But actually, probably what Mancini is doing is more sensible. A very, very strong core to the team, very hard to play against, and they're very high in the table. Mm. It's the kind of team that Arsenal have usually floundered against, and given that I tipped Arsenal to win the league, I do hope that they can show more combativeness on this occasion.
They are so strong and hard to play against that they've won their last four in the league, and they are so strong that Blackpool only didn't beat them because of some dodgy refereeing decisions.
I think the euphemism would be a kind of work in progress. Right. I assume that in the long term they do expect something more spectacular than we're seeing now, but I think Mancini is just trying to create some sort of team ethic in their play.
Were there some signs at Bloomfield Road that Mancini is beginning to veer more towards the spectacular with two up front and then the introduction of Silva and that amazing Silva goal? Can we talk about that again? Ooh.
Possibly it was horses for courses, though. They're playing a team that are going to finish in the bottom half of the table, and they didn't have Touré, so it made sense perhaps to do that. I've heard quite a lot of a stick for sort of saying I'm not convinced by Manchester City. You know, I get the odd email from fans saying, well, you know, what are you talking about? But I think it's worth pointing out that exactly at this point last season, City had 17 points from 8 games, 1-5, drawn 2, lost 1. This time, at this point of this season, it's exactly the same. So they're actually performing no better. So I think we shouldn't get carried away. Yes, they've beaten Chelsea. Yes, they've beaten Liverpool at home. But I think we'll know much better if they've played Arsenal and they've played Manchester United on November the 10th.
Sean Cash, good do you think a team has to be to win the Premier League this season?
To beat Chelsea?
It's a fair point, but I think Chelsea are about the same as they were last year. So City are going to have to get 85, 86, 87 points.
I think they're better because Essien is like a new signing for them.
Yeah. Just going to say, City probably overachieved in terms of points. Most games, Blackpool, Newcastle, they haven't played that well. But that's probably a good thing, really. They are, as Kevin said, a work in progress. And I think they should be really happy. I know they're not that great. So I think it's a more important game for Arsenal. They've had a lot of big wins lately, but they have to win a big game now because I think for their own self-esteem as much as anything, if they lose again, if say they lose one, play well and lose 1-0, then I think they'll have real problems.
I mean, I think it's worth also pointing out that Arsenal had used to go to Main Road in Eastland around the sort of early part of the last decade and smack them. There was a 5-1, there was a 4-0. But City won 4-2 last year and have won 4 of the last 5 at home against Arsenal.
Well, they had a 5-1 midweek, of course, Arsenal, against the previously unbeaten Shakhtar Donetsk, who many people, including you, I think, Sean, were suggesting might be tough opponents for them. Nick Greaves posting, "What is Song like?" That's Arsenal for you right there. Defensive midfielder tries a Rabona on the goal line. High art indeed. And, of course, it went in.
That was one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. I don't care that it went in. It was extraordinary.
Was there any...
If I was his manager, I'd drop him for 2 games and I'd say, "Grow up, don't be such a silly fool." It was just remarkable. What's he doing?
Right, a Rabona, by the way, is when you kick the ball behind your own standing leg.
Yeah, and fall over him in our case. But yeah, just bizarre. Absolutely weird. What was he thinking?
Fabregas is back.
Yeah, and it's good to see him in Wilshire, which is very exciting for English people. I'm slightly worried. People talk a lot about Wilshire in terms of England, but I'm worried because he's so used to playing with really good players around him, good technical players, give and goes. Well, that's not going to happen with England, is it? So you have to think really carefully about getting carried away with how he fits into the England team.
It's an old topic, but I mean, the problem too is they sign 2 centre-halves in the summer and you think if one of these guys clicks, it might give them the solidity. But Scolacci and, you know, Koscielny at Arsenal haven't done that yet. And of course, Vermaelen's been injured.
Yeah.
But if they were to get Vermaelen and somebody reasonable beside him and Van Persie was back, then maybe you'd see a whole new possibility for that team.
I think if they win one of these games, not so much City, if they beat Chelsea when they play really well, I think they could just click and go up again. Wenger's teams often do that. They have one kind of win. I remember them in 2001 winning at Anfield with 10 men and then they just went up a notch and were unplayable for 18 months.
Team, though,
no, but they kind of, the way they play, you know, there's that rhythm to them. And but even I do think confidence is an issue.
But don't you think the Invincible seasons where they drew 0-0 at Old Trafford and then they went the rest, they were very lucky to draw 0-0. They had the whole Keon Van Nistelrooy thing after Van Nistelrooy missed the penalty. You remember that, Jimbo, don't you?
Yeah, very much. I'm just flabbergasted by the notion that they are just the right result away from suddenly turning into the Invincible.
I think there's a confidence leap with Wenger's teams because of the way they play. And when they get on that roll, I think they could be really unstoppable. The 0102 team won 14 games in a row at the back end of the season. 0304 were unbeaten. 97-98, they laboured a bit until March.
But they were unbeaten and then not because they got a right result somewhere along the line, no, but because
they have these kind of symbolic moments that take them to another level. Personally, that's my interpretation of Arsenal. In 1978, they won at Old Trafford, they hadn't scored there for 5 years. Then I think they won the last 10 to win the league. I just think Wenger's teams do that.
Well, that's interesting. Well, in which case, it would be extremely interesting to see if they do get the result and what then comes of that. In other weekend Premier League news, Spurs are hosting Everton. They won that, Sean, 2-1 last season, but...
Well, Everton have won 3 of the last 4 at White Hart Lane. And it's a really fascinating, slightly weird thing that Spurs always tend to either win or draw at Goodison Park. And Everton have a decent record at White Hart Lane.
All right. The fact that it's coming straight after this big Champions League game, does that have any impact? Because people have been saying about Spurs after Champions League a bit wobbly.
I find it really hard one to call, but I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think they're two very likeable open teams. I think that'll be a really good game.
Do you sometimes reckon that David Moyes has become a prisoner of a stereotype? You know, he's that pragmatic Scots guy who doesn't spend much and gets the best out of players. It's a compliment, but at the same time it implies that he's not going to get a big job because that's his level. But we don't know what David Moyes would do if he was given a top 5 team, top 4 team.
Well, in the meantime he's got Everton and
he's had them in in the top tier.
Well, they're coming off a very big win in the derby. And Yakubu versus the Spurs defence. It's going to be an interesting contest, isn't it, after he was barging Liverpool off the ball.
Spurs have struggled a bit, haven't they, juggling Champions League and thinking, I'm not sure how good at rotation Redknapp is. Or not so much not good, but just not experienced. He likes to pick his best team. So it'll be interesting. I think, I wouldn't be surprised if Everton got at least a draw there.
Really?
In a good open game, James.
Really? Yeah, okay. Excellent. Everton's win last Sunday has rocketed them up to 11th, leaving their neighbours Liverpool down in the bottom 3. Liverpool, we mentioned, are over in Naples playing Napoli in the Europa League on Thursday night. And then they got Blackburn when they come back on Sunday. Are things going to get even worse for Roy Hodgson?
They've got to win soon, haven't they? Allardyce is quite shrewd in terms of setting teams up defensively. He doesn't like Liverpool, so I'm sure he'll have his players very much up for it, even though his beef was mainly with Benitez. The way Liverpool are playing, every game looks difficult. If you can lose at home to Blackpool, then every game's difficult. Right. But it's not going to... I mean, they're not going to get relegated, are they? They're far too good for that.
I don't know about that. Did you hear... who was it? Robbie Fowler was over from Australia, where he's currently, I think, on the books of Perth Glory. All right. I don't know what you're sniggering about. Australian listeners, that was Rob Smythe. Now, anyway, Robbie Fowler said, he, of course, went down with Leeds in 2004. He says he thinks that the Leeds squad that he went down with was better in quality than this Liverpool team. I don't know that you can rule out them going down. But also, any chance that this game against Blackburn is going to be Roy Hodgson's last on the Liverpool bench, Sean?
Well, the bookmakers, William Hill, have actually suspended betting on Hodgson being the next manager to go, and also Frank Rijkaard to be the next Liverpool manager.
Frank Rijkaard, who resigned from Galatasaray 2 or 3 days ago? No, earlier in the week, anyway. Yeah.
It's quite a strange thing to see how much this hurts Roy Hodgson. I mean, no one wants to be sacked, but obviously he feels at that age he's got this big club, and it's his big chance, and now suddenly it's going to be taken away from him. Mm. He really does show his emotions whenever he talks about the job. He's virtually begging to be allowed a bit longer.
It's very sad, isn't it?
It took him 3 months to get going at Fulham, didn't it? They had some terrible results early on. I mean, I don't know if that relates to his training. Maybe he has very specific ideas of what players should do at certain points of a game. Did Liverpool sack managers mid-season? I can't remember. Has it ever happened?
Yeah, but a new owner must want a new manager.
Yes. Well, now, yeah.
I think a new owner who witnessed last Sunday's performance and what seemed to be the lack of communication between the manager and the players. I'm not sure equally how much bringing Frank Rijkaard in at this point would necessarily help.
No, I mean, has Rijkaard done anything apart from Barcelona, where he was blessed with unbelievably good players? I'm not sure he's going to look at the first touches of a few of those players and fancy it.
Your 2000? Did I?
Yeah, they did right again. Very good players. Mm. Yeah, it was. Yeah. I'm not sure he's the man either.
All right. Sean, you put in a special request to talk about Blackpool, who are at Birmingham, and West Brom, who are hosting Fulham.
Only just because I had my record books and my thick spectacles on earlier. And everyone has rightly, I think, praised West Brom and Blackpool for their performance this season. I know they've really impressed me, particularly West Brom. But it's worth pointing out that exactly at this point last season, Burnley were 12th, having got 12 points from 9 games. West Brom have also have 12 points, but from 8 games.
But Blackpool then Owen have Coyle 10 went. Points
from 8 games. No, but he went after that.
Yeah,
but then he went. That's what I mean. He had a cracking start under Owen Coyle, but then he left.
But the point is that even though most people think West Brom are going to be fine and Blackpool perhaps are going to be all right, it's still...
And it's the same with Hull the year before. When the winter kicks in, it can often, you get on a run of defeats, it can be hard to break the cycle. West Brom looked terrific. Di Matteo is a real class act, I think.
What about West Ham's game with Newcastle? West Ham, of course, still bottom of the table, despite the fact that I think they're unbeaten in the last 3, possibly 4 in all competitions. Interestingly, Newcastle, there was this story that had Coloccini not equalised at the last minute in their game against, what was it, Wigan last weekend, that Chris Hughton would have been fired.
Really?
And a certain rotund Dutch manager would have been installed. I don't know if that last bit's true. But, apparently Hughton's under pressure there.
That's terrible. But there was always a fear with Newcastle. I don't know whether it's driven by the fans or Ashley or whoever. They kind of sense that they want a bigger name. Hmm. And there was always a fear this would happen. But I'm surprised it's happened this soon.
It might be spurious rumour talk, but it was apparently from quite an attendable source. I don't know who that was. But anyway, there you go. That's what's ahead of us then this weekend. We'll be back on Monday as ever to have a look at how those games turned out. In the meantime, many thanks to producer Andy, to Sean Ingle, Kevin McCarra, and to Rob Smythe, and to you, the listener there at home. Have a super weekend, and we'll speak to you all on Monday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.